This is the August 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Split. He is with AgMarket.net. Chuck Shelby is here from Risk Management Commodities, and Chip Nellinger joins us from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand. Anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities, I'd like to start with you. What's on your list of items we should discuss for the day?
Well, we have the USDA report next week, and obviously the market thinks it's a giant crop. Question is how big it is. What's the weather going to be in August? And we had, you know, this is an interesting crop to say the least, and certainly had plenty of water this year.
Brian Split from AgMarket.net. I hope your list includes some chart techs for the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could definitely cover some tech things. We've got multiple agricultural markets that are testing some very big picture areas. We can get into that as we discuss more.
And finally, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing on your list.
Yeah, both those guys covered a lot, Todd. The crop report coming up. What are the funds going to do, you know, going forward? Have we built in the biggest, you know, crop size right now with some of these massive corn crop estimates we've got? And, you know, are we going to see any trade deal out there? I think the funds have been a little handcuffed, not wanting to put too big of a position on in beans because of the uncertainty. Just one tweet, one news story could really change the name of the game in the bean market. So that could cause some choppy trade going forward into August.
Well, let's start with the USDA WASD, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, the Crop Production Report, which are both due out at 11 a.m. Central, noon in the Eastern time zone on Tuesday of next week. Chuck Shelby, you've looked at this. You always at Risk Management Commodities have a set of numbers you're thinking about as it's related to yield national for corn and soybeans. And I also want to know whether you think Nebraska can make 200 bushels better corn this year than not. What are you seeing?
Looking close to 185 on corn. You know, it's a really good crop out there. When you look across the country, some of the states to the west, interestingly enough, were supposed to have bad and dry weather and hot weather. Turns out it's one of the wettest growing seasons ever. You know, there's some problems out there. We keep seeing these pollination issues. You know, there's a lot of diseases going around. Guys are pretty good at treating that, but will they put two passes on? It's a lot of perfection is hard to achieve at times. So right now, again, as the guys have talked about, perfection is the name of the game. I think one thing that we will be interested in seeing, no matter how high, I believe it is a record crop, but what happens next year? Can we duplicate these conditions? I mean, is this the best we can be as far as moisture? So I look at this crop being a record, and again, it's going to set the bar pretty high for years to come. So will we duplicate this kind of weather? How do we finish in August? Right now looks pretty good.
Chip Nellinger, what numbers are you using at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing?
Yeah, I, right now I think I'm in the 182, 183 range. I don't think Chuck's out of line to be 185. I think it's an almost impossibility to be up at the high end of some of these estimates at 188, 189. Just a variable amount of problems out there. Chuck mentioned some of them. You know, I mean, we had plenty of rain in July. But we had some awful hot temperatures. I'm hearing producers also talk about, man, I might actually have an early harvest. I'm talking some northern Illinois corn that has never stressed for moisture. The heat's really pushing things along. And, you know, typically when you do that, it's not the type of finish that you want, even if you get some moisture along with it. So I think I'm in the 182-ish type number. I wouldn't be shocked in the end result to have it be 181, 182, and maybe, you know, kind of disappoint the market because we're trading somewhere maybe well north of that, maybe even north of 185. So, you know, it's not where we finish, it's where we trade. You never know that, you know, in real time, but I think we may be going a long ways towards factoring in maybe the biggest yield, especially in corn.
And Brian Split from agmarket.net.
Yeah, so part of this is the art of trying to figure out what the USDA might say versus what you really believe internally that the crop is. And so for the purpose of this, we felt pretty comfortable to go just a hair over 2% above trend. A year ago, the USDA went 183.1. And with just a lot of the satellite imagery that's being used, which is a big part of their yield estimate, so we went 184.8. But I think we are at the point where the market is pricing in more than that. We've seen some private numbers that have been obviously higher than that. I think the most well-known one is 188.1 out of StoneX. And so I think the market's more in danger of currently overdoing the yield estimates to the upside than they are underestimating it. And Chip made a really good point about the overnight temperatures we've seen, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt. And I think that's going to be something that kind of sneaks back into the market here. But you know, a lot of this crop I'm hearing is maybe 24 days ahead of schedule, just by being pushed along further than it should be at this stage. So that's going to have an impact on the crop. But, you know, again, a year ago, the USDA raised yield in August. We had a dry August. They raised it again in September and October. And then we really didn't get a major cut until January with a very small revision in November. But the market knew before the USDA told us.
Chuck, outside of Lafayette, Indiana, I know you've probably been into the cornfields. What are you seeing in your own crop? I was in a bit more than a week ago. Good crop. However, it is missing here and there just a kernel, which surprised me. I don't know that I've come across that in years.
Well, it was kind of interesting. 10 days ago, I was looking at our own sweet corn and was going to pick some. First time we share a lane with one of our neighbors. And I hadn't noticed it driving down the road at 50 miles an hour, but once I stopped, I noticed the silks were extremely long, and I pulled some ears and, you know, really poor pollination. I was surprised. Now, our corn, different variety and different planting, but it was fine. So that was a shock to me. But, you know, as I talked to producers around, we have, you know, fields that look great, but you really need to look at it. I think there's going to be some tip back out there. The ears are extremely long. You know, 16, 18 around. It's a good crop, but I think Brian alluded to the fact, and Chip, I mean, the finish is really important. What we're going to see now in this August report is, you know, what farmers might think, what the satellites look like. A very good crop, but how far we blow it out to the top end, I don't think we'll know again as we get in the field and see what the combines roll. But a lot of variability out there, but a lot of really fantastic. Some guys are going to have the best crop ever.
Okay, Brian, start with the tech for me in the charts. What do you see after the 3 days this week where we made new contract lows for corn?
So I'll start with what I would consider really the big picture long-term support. You know, that would be a continuous chart. And what I mean by a continuous chart is it always plots the front month contract at any given time. And so if we go back to 2020 and draw the uptrend from 2020, which were lows that we made during COVID, there were two kind of distinct lows. One was in April during the initial onset of the bearishness when we realized what was going on, the world was shutting down. And then there was kind of a secondary low in August. That started the uptrend. The lows we made in August of a year ago bottomed right at that trend line. And so the lows yesterday that we scored, this is now the September contract at 375, was right against that trend line. So you've got long-term trend line support on corn. You could go into the soybeans and draw their long-term uptrend. And this actually goes all the way back to the period of, what is this, back in the early 2000s, 2001, and draw that long-term uptrend. That is where the front month beans bottomed out here this week. And that's also right where the short-term uptrend from August of a year ago to December comes in. So we're at really some key long-term support. And it's not just corn and soybeans. You look at the continuous chart for KC wheat, for example, we've got the very same falling wedge structure that we had in a period between about 2008 and 2010 that eventually bottomed the market and we came screaming out of there into highs made in 2011. We've got that same descending wedge here. It's just a matter of really getting through this downtrend, and it could be several months down the road, but I think we're working on consolidating into a bottom here in the wheat market. And even look at a market like rice, you know, that's a market that a lot of in the Delta are looking at, and prices have been substantially off of highs there. but we've got a long-term uptrend in rice that started back in about 2015, 16, 17, 18, and we're at that uptrend in the rice market as well. So you've got a lot of these agricultural commodities that have found themselves down to long-term uptrend support here as we're pricing in very large crops.
Do you, from your tech side, think that we are at this point where it's the support in it, it should bounce, or are you fearful that it might break this to the downside?
I think for what we know right now, we've probably gone low enough for the short term, and we might need to see some more confirmation, actual field reports of big yields. But when I think about where the market bottomed out last year, that was in August of a year ago, Dease corn bottomed out at 385. The low yesterday was at 396 and three quarters. We're talking just shy of 12 cents. Higher than where we bottomed out last year. And when we bottomed out last year, we were operating on the idea of carryout being about 2.037. So you have to plug in, I think it's about a 185.5 yield using our balance sheets with, no change to demand whatsoever to get your carryout to a 2.037 because of where the old crop carry-in resides. So I think the idea that we kind of bottomed about a dime above last year when we're already talking numbers higher than 185 really puts the onus on actual field reports to confirm that the crop is what it is. Because if it's not, it's the same exact setup as last year where we're overdoing the yield expectation on paper. And meanwhile, as we're doing that, prices are cheap. And look at our export book going on. I mean, we just sold over 3 million tons of corn last week, and we're running at a tremendous pace right now on our demand.
Chip, do you believe that that means we have a sideways market in front of us for a month or a month and a half while we wait for the combines to run in corn across the Midwest?
Well, I think my biggest fear is the bean side. I think, to Brian's point, we hit some pretty key support areas. We were way overextended, oversold. We needed a bounce anyway. And the way the markets bottom is they usually bounce like this. You get people that want to sell that first bounce, and then the decision or the test comes whether we can make new lows or not. And so I think that's ahead of us. I think sideways, to me, makes some sense for a period of time, days, a couple weeks. I think it is going to be important to see how we react, how the market reacts to whatever number the USDA does put out. They come out with a 184 and the market rallies, maybe we are in the case where we have factored the biggest crop in and it's not going to be as bad. The other thing to keep in mind, Brian mentioned this, demand has just been phenomenal in corn. And the way the USDA typically works in their economic models, when they increase supply like that, they don't keep demand static typically. So they assume that with increasing supply, prices are going to go lower. That increases demand and it keeps, this big burdensome carryout from being realized on paper. So that may be enough to kind of keep the bears disappointed, so to speak, if we can't push into new lows well under $4, and if we can't make new lows, say back under 980 in the beans real quick. I think we can bounce a little bit, maybe get into, September, October, and kind of find out for real what's out there from actual harvest data.
And Chuck, how do you see this playing out going forward?
I think the biggest factor is when the funds want to get out. They're massively short. Maybe we could go down, like Brian said, a little bit lower, but you got to look at the meat on the bone for the funds. And as we go forward, I mean, how much worse price can we look at? Well, you take inflation into account, these grains are extremely cheap. And I think that's why world buyers are coming to the table. Do we make a harvest low on futures before we get to, harvest? It wouldn't be shocking, but I think the thing to watch out for is the basis. The basis is, in some areas, could be a problem if this crop in certain areas is as big as it looks. So I know some areas are starting to see the basis widen for harvest delivery, but I think that's one thing producers need to, be aware of and watch out and make plans for.
On that note, JSA follows basis really closely. What are they telling you, Brian?
Well, we had actually made a recommendation here recently on corn, and this is really specifically for bushels that need to be sold out of the field that you do not have on-farm storage. We want basis locked in on those bushels. We do see that as being a problem as we get closer to harvest. And there are some areas, especially if you're, in the eastern corn belt, where basis on old crop is still rather strong. Basis on new crop is maybe not strong, but acceptable. Could be quite a bit worse. And so those are the bushels that we're specifically concerned about. On a different side of the market, and looking at soybeans, basis for soybeans come fall in most areas just really stinks. But if you kind of look at what basis looks like, maybe as you get back out to February delivery, for example, there's quite a bit of carry in the cash market. So maybe going further out, setting basis out there in February, if that's an opportunity for you, try to find a way to lock in the carry from Nov to March. When I think about the amount of carry from November to March right now, it's about 35, 35 and a half cents. And that's an awful lot. So like 2023 was a year where we built tremendous carries. We were in a bear market. We had high interest rates for the first time in a bear market. So we saw carries that we hadn't seen. And the biggest carry that we saw from November, March in 2023 was 39 and a half cents. We're 4 cents away from that, but we didn't see 39 and a half cents a carry that year until October 3rd. It's early August. I think we're way overdoing the carry in the market right now. I think the commercials are put have pushed the carry out here so they can lock it in now before they get the bushels. And I think if you're a producer, you got to be thinking the same way. Lock in the carry here. You could do it on the board by buying the spread and set some basis on some of these deferred contracts if it makes sense for you.
I want to follow up on a different area just a bit, and Chuck or Chip, if you could take this up, and maybe Chuck, maybe start. I'm thinking a little bit about the wheat market and the issues that corn has with it when wheat is depressed in price, and whether it can manage to lead out of this marketplace. We have the harvest done. The northern hemisphere is the primary place where most of the wheat crop is grown in the U.S., other than or grown across the planet, other than Argentina and Australia. Can wheat find a way to lift the market or at least lead this market as we go into the fall?
It seems like the best hope for wheat would be a cheap dollar, but wheat's just become a crop that is the least profitable for producers to produce. My answer has been make wheat the national cover crop for a while, and that would solve the problem. It's struggling. When you also, you have to worry about the problems in the Middle East, and we're kind of a last resort. I think wheat acres will probably drift lower again, but going forward, I think the hope for corn still lies in the export business out there. And wheat, I just can't see it get too excited at a point until we maybe cut acres back even more going forward.
Chip, I'll get to you on wheat in just a second, but let me follow up, Chuck, with you on the export market. Mexico has been our number one export destination for corn. The tariffs are paused again, relatively speaking, with that nation. It might give them an option to continue to import corn into Mexico. Rails are, the rail lines are the way, and those trains go across every day. Will they take advantage of it and front load in fear that they may end up in a tariff situation? I know it's covered by USMCA, but it could deteriorate.
Well, I work with some farmers in Texas that have been harvesting the crop, and that's continually moving into Mexico. So, Mexico has been our best buyer as we go forward. Maybe the tariffs are kind of like the stock market reacted pretty negatively when tariffs were first announced, and we recovered there. I think as time goes on, maybe just the tariff word loses some of its concern. World buyers, I mean, if China's going to buy everything from South America, those other countries, come to us. Again, I think it's a lot to do with price. I mean, they look at charts too. They look at the crop coming. It's an opportunity, I think, to load up here. And I think that demand's going to continue to be there. If we try to predict the tariffs, that's pretty challenging from day to day. It might change, but I'm pretty comfortable that some of these countries are going to continue to buy from us. Japan's another example. And as we go forward, the tariffs will work themselves out, and I think a function of price and what this crop is going to impact those world buyers.
And Chip, if you could follow up in that export market area and maybe say a word about wheat as well.
Yeah, I think it can go hand in hand. I think the wheat, if you look at the exports of the last couple of months, they've very quietly been above expectations, right? And so some of that is the cheap wheat, new contract lows. I think that there's some talk that the Russian crop maybe is off quality and maybe not as big a yielding as what we thought. And so the seasonal post-harvest rally is a little bit late in my mind, but I think the rally in wheat the last couple of days off the lows has really helped the corn market, taken some of the pressure off of the corn markets. So obviously, they're, competitive feed grains. I agree with Chuck. Obviously, in the short run, a tariff, an increase in a tariff, or the breakdown of some trade talks can have a short run influence. I think it's a matter of price, right? And to the point of China, they don't necessarily need our beans right now. They might into winter ahead of the new crop harvest. Countries are going to, do what's in their best interest and make deals that they feel is right. And whether our biggest customers, whether that's Japan, Mexico, China to some extent, when it pencils for them to buy our products, I think they still will. And I think wheat's a, perfect example of that. There hasn't been a standout buyer, but just very quietly, we've really, seen a nice uptick in wheat exports. Obviously, the corn exports have been enormous. I believe for this point in the calendar, for new crop, we're a all-time record or very close second in having a record amount of corn booked ahead. The exports have been tremendous. So a lot of reasons to be bearish because of trade deals and tariffs, but the numbers just aren't proving it other than the Chinese bean demand right now. And I'm not sure, tariff or no tariff, if they'd be buying our beans anyway because of the size of the Brazil crop.
Brian, can you talk about the interplay between wheat and corn as it's related to the charts and how one follows the other sometimes and what that means for producers across the board?
Well, I mean, it's when you have a wheat sometimes becomes a feed component when it gets cheap enough relative to corn, and that's going to help chew through some of that extra wheat supply that you have generally when it's priced low relative to corn. But I think when you in the context of you way that you asked the question earlier, I don't think wheat is necessarily going to be what leads us out of here. I think the market's probably pretty comfortable with the size of the wheat crop. There's really not going to be much change there. We've already seen the harvest. So that's a demand story moving forward. And Chip mentioned it, wheat exports have been good, not as stellar as the corn exports here this week, but still very good. And so I think you've got the demand here is going to keep a steady hand under the market. But the corn market probably has more potential where we overshot the idea of how big the crop is going to be. And then, we might need to recorrect this thing a little bit more because we still don't really know what's out there. We know what the wheat crop is. So I see this market maybe being a little bit more of a corn leader here if the market does perceive that we've overshot the yield. Now, the big picture for wheat, we are holding the uptrend that we've had in place since the lows last year. We've been kind of meandering about. We're at the low end of a trading range in wheat, and we've been in this trading range for the last year. So I think you've got, maybe some upside in wheat here. I think the wheat market could probably, if we're looking at yesterday, very good 1 day bar. We kind of had a long tail below the market, open and closed at the same price at the upper end of the chart. They kind of, you'd call that a dragonfly doji, which usually is a reversal here off of lows. And that should bring some short covering in. And I think you probably could see wheat rally 40 to 50 cents off the lows we made yesterday. That will help corn. I think the leading element of this might be the corn market overdoing the yield estimates to the upside.
Chuck, China's still not into the marketplace for soybean imports. How much of an issue is this going to be for the U.S. crop as we go into harvest time and all the way through January, when if Brazil is predicted, as they do, to go in early because of La Niña and rainfall coming there, we may have a shorter export window?
It certainly turned into a problem, especially as we enter into harvest here. Concerning here, but I don't think Trump is going to go over to talk to Z or wherever they might meet till October. So they may just hang out and use that as a kind of a negotiating tool. So it would be great to see them start buying. They're really getting late for the time window that they usually do. So I think it's just another demand problem that we're going to have to deal with. And unfortunately, going into harvest, we need those kind of buys to pick up the pace and move the beans out at harvest. So an issue, if they solve something and they decide that they're going to start buying down the road, probably gives you a pretty good jump in the market, but doesn't seem right now that it's going to happen anytime soon.
And Chip, if this is the case, and it appears it will be the case, it presents a problem for producers who generally store more corn on the farm than they do soybeans. What should they do in the case that they're running beans across the scale?
Yeah, that's a tough call. Brian mentioned earlier the bean basis in most areas for fall just abysmal right now, and it's because of that. There may not be a real good choice here other than bite the bullet. A guy may want to think about locking some of that basis in, sooner rather than later as we get into the gut of harvest in October. That fall bean basis could be pretty ugly. I would say though that even without China, I have been surprised that we continue to sell beans, more beans than what I had initially expected. I think this world market is really messed up. The basis in South America, either they sold way more to Brazil or to China and they're out, or it's logistic or political. The basis is out of whack. In fact, there's reports that on paper, it would even pencil to import U.S. beans into Brazil right now. And that's given us an upper hand right now on some of these other countries that might be buying Brazil outside of Chinese demand. I think the other thing that's beneficial is crush margins are still near a 10-year high. So we've got that demand. And that doesn't matter if beans are $14 or $4 a bushel. If the crush margins are profitable, crushers will buy every bushel they can. And I think that's helping offset some of the lost Chinese demand for this point in time as well.
Okay, and finally, before we get to our final word, I'd like each of you to think and talk a little bit about profit per acre, bushels times yield, and what producers really have in the field if they have this big of a corn crop and a really pretty good soybean crop. How do they have to think about that and manage it? Sometimes you get caught up in just what price am I selling at as opposed to what my profit really is per acre. Chuck, can you get me started on that one, please?
I think it's a very good point, Todd. I mean, producers are definitely disappointed in the price, but when you look at the potential and in a lot of areas to have a really good to maybe one of the best crops ever, it's not as bad as it might seem. Unfortunately, there are producers in parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Eastern Corn Belt that are struggling. It's not going to turn out the way they hoped. But again, when you look at maybe you have a really good bean yield, a good corn yield, times prices, I think that are obtainable, or we can rally back and get some more, opportunities. I think it's not as bad as it might seem. I think we have to manage the expectations. Questions still become, though, that I think some of the guys, what's out there in the field, it's still pretty big concern. We got a lot of growing season to go on fill on corn and on soybeans too. So got to look at it a little bit differently as we move into the harvest season and get prepared, make a plan here.
Scout, figure out what you think you have on the bottom end. Make sure you have that ready to go and to market. What kind of targets might you set for those kinds of bushels, Brian Split, when you look at the tech and the chart side?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say exactly how high the market could go. We know the market, March corn, for example, last year went 404 and then it rallied a dollar, into February. So the market can obviously change direction and make a larger move in the opposite direction than most people think in the big picture. So I think right now it's really about managing your high priority bushels, the stuff that needs to be sold maybe of old crop, and those bushels unfortunately are being sold under duress. So if I'm liquidating those old crop bushels, I would probably like to find some type of an option strategy to maintain ownership far enough into 2026 to take advantage of a change in market sentiment. And then it's the bushels that you can't store on farm. And if there's one thing that I will always tell a producer any year, every given year that I do this, it is please do not pay commercial storage. You can find ways to own on paper without the downside risk of the market, cheaper than what they're going to charge you for commercial storage. So do some apple to apple comparisons.
And Chip, finally, managing total profit per acre. How do you talk to producers about that?
Yeah, Todd, I think that's an interesting question. I actually was thinking about this earlier. I'm preparing for a presentation I'm doing tonight in Burlington, Iowa, and I was thinking about this. I really think now these are assuming bushels that are stored on farm. Right, the over the scale stuff at fall is a different animal and a different plan. But a lot of producers have a lot of on farm storage anymore. Between the carry in the market and expected basis appreciation out into winter, I think it's really possible for producers to kind of see a gross revenue back towards $1,200 an acre on corn, and that should be kind of a target rather than price. If you want some upside ownership, add some calls to it, or get some call spreads or something. If you can achieve that, I think that's $100 to $200 an acre profit, depending on the operation. Beans are going to be the tough spot in my mind. I think that if you get them back towards $800 an acre, gross, that we ought to be maybe thinking about playing defense there. And I know that's not making much, if any, money. But that's kind of the way I'm thinking about this. To Brian's point, this thing could rally a lot further than what we expect if the crop ends up shorter than expected. But I think this is a year to think about the carry in the market and learn how to use that if you haven't done it already. Expected basis, that alone, carrying basis, could be $60, $70 an acre improvement from what it looks like at fall. And then look at those gross dollars and have that as your goal rather than an actual price this year.
And let's wrap up as we usually do with a final word from each of you. I'll start with you, Chuck Shelby, at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Your final word, please.
I think we've been through a lot of negativity here in agriculture. Don't know when it'll turn around, but I think the funds have been pushing this market to the downside. I think there'll be opportunities that can turn around. Look for opportunities going forward and make a plan for harvest here.
Brian Split of agmarket.net, your final word?
Yeah, I think you just really try and hone in on what we were just talking about. Really get an understanding of your own operation. $4 corn is not the same for an individual in North Dakota as it for a farmer in New York as it is for one in Arkansas, right? So you really just have to focus on what your yield is, what your cost structure is, and have realistic expectations, and then have a plan in place of how you're going to manage it if the price gets to where you need it to be. Because a lot of times we kind of try to make decisions on the fly rather than figuring out what we want to do ahead of time and then executing that plan.
And finally, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Yeah, I just reiterate what I said earlier about the gross dollar and profit goals this year. I mean, it's definitely different than what we're used to, right? Than a few of the years past here, we're looking at $200, $300, $400 an acre profit. We're not in that environment anymore. If we can see $100 to $200 an acre gains in corn and back close to break even or small profitability in beans, it may be worthwhile to pull the trigger aggressively if you want some upside. Look at some calls or call spreads. To both Chuck and Brian's point, you got to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you're going to watch the rally come, you're going to watch it go, and you're not going to have acted on it. So I would just agree with both those guys too. You got to have a plan and you got to implement it.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Chip Nellinger, Brian Split, and Chuck Shelby. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.